Welcome to the Angus Table, the podcast from Angus Australia. I'm Scott Wright, the CEO at Angus Australia. Each episode will bring conversations with breeders, industry leaders, innovators, insights, stories and ideas that matter and hopefully add value to your Angus operation. Whether it's genetics, markets, pasture management, marketing experts or people shaping the breed, this is where the Angus community pulls up a chair at the Angus Table. Thanks for joining us. Well, look, welcome, Lucy, this afternoon to our new formatted podcast, which is called The Angus Table. We've known each other for probably about 3 years and often have good conversations. So great to have you on the podcast, Lucy.
Thank you, Scott. Humbled to be here.
Yeah, great. Great. No, I'm sure we'll have a good chat today. Do you want to just give a bit of an overview of what does Lucy do? What's your background and how did you get to Morrissey Livestock Services?
Okay, well, I'll keep the story short because there's been, I'm probably known for taking the path less walked a little bit, Scott. I guess the livestock industry or agricultural industry is thanks to my parents. They managed cattle stations when I was young. So I was born in Mount Isa and brought up barefoot in the Simpson Desert. My mum was actually from Melbourne. My father was the station manager, so they got married and had my sisters and I, and we've moved around quite a bit, as it seems. I actually finished school in Western District, Victoria. So I've lived quite a diverse life and had a lot of exposure of different lifestyles, which I think is very character building and offers that sort of diversity in the service offerings that I need to have today to do what I do. Which essentially is facilitating stockmanship training to the beef cattle industry as well as consultancy services to beef production businesses. So with particular focus on animal welfare, handler safety and high levels of productivity.
Excellent, excellent. No, that's great. You're a Marcus graduate as well, aren't you, Lucy?
Yes, sir. So I went back. I'm not going to tell you how old I was when I went, but I went back as a mature age student, we'll say, and that really changed the trajectory of my life. It was, it gave me a really great purpose. It rewired the brain a little. It built my confidence, and it gave me the shove in the right direction I needed to get to where I am today. Very, very supportive. Lecturers and tutors there who I gave a pretty hard time to, trying to get everything done that I needed to get done. And it also set me up to meet Dr. Tom in the States for the first time for my study tour as well. So it really gave me purpose that year, and thanks to, I guess, having the courage to go and do that as a mature age student and really making the most of it and knowing what my purpose and my goals were of going there, it set me up to... was one of the building blocks, I guess, to where I am today.
Yeah, that's great. I guess it's a chicken and egg question. Was the spark of helping people improve their stockmanship first, or was it that study experience that then did you fall into it? Like, what? How did that sort of come about? And you've talked about Dr. Tom before, and how did he help you form where you wanted to go?
Sure. So I was brought up on cattle stations, but I finished high school in Western District, Victoria. So I was completely out of the industry. And once I finished high school, I reconnected with the land a little bit, but then ended up studying university, going to university for the first time. And following that, I travelled all over the world and worked seasonally in hospitality and just had a really fabulous time in general. And I guess I got to a point where I was kind of like, you know, what am I doing? And I came back to Queensland, found my father, came back to Queensland and was just going to stop in for a while and ended up riding a horse and chasing some cows and was like, oof, here I am. And the frustration for me was that I was mature, but I was to a degree inexperienced. But this lifestyle was also in my blood. And I had my father and a couple of his mates who were ringers way back when, but were working for him at the time. So I had really great support and mentorship and probably not mentorship, yeah. Direction, let's say, keep me in those lanes. The frustration was, though, because essentially my experience was lacking. I couldn't get to where I wanted to. And there wasn't those fast-track courses. There wasn't the support systems. There wasn't training. It was just get out there and try and do it. And I went through feedlotting and I went back to stations and a bunch of other jobs in between, but I just couldn't fast-track quick enough. And I wanted that opportunity, but you kind of had to wait 10 years to prove yourself. And I'm pretty impatient. So I guess going to Marcus was giving me that ticket to a degree. And it also gave me the opportunity to research an idea that my father Shane and I had chewed on a little bit from when he went to the States the year before and met Dr. Tom for the first time, or it might have been the year before that. And we spoke about this concept of a training platform like these guys, where you are boots on the ground and you can be the link between that, you know, that academic veterinarian space, that language that most of our stockmen don't understand, but we need to know that. And for those people who really want to upskill and know why it is that they do what they do with animals, that applied animal science, that basic veterinarian knowledge, the diagnosis capabilities and all those other elements in beef production, regardless of the supply chain you're in, there was a real opportunity there to develop a version of that here in Australia. And it just seemed like one hell of a good time to do it. So Marcus kind of gave me that opportunity to really invest some time in developing that idea and the confidence to bite the bullet and go out and do it. So it was a combination of opportunities. I came back out into industry and just had to work my butt off then for a little while anyway, but kept putting together pieces of this idea of how we're going to found Morrissey and Friends Livestock Services. And within, I guess, 2 years, we'd started doing that, building a client list.
Interesting. Did you, when you were working, say, on stations or feedlots, and did you notice problems? Could you see perhaps animals not being handled in the best way and think there was a better solution? Was it obvious to you?
Yes. And I didn't, and I'm a very intuitive person, Scott, I think you know this. I didn't necessarily know why, and I wasn't derogatory towards anybody, but I could see that something wasn't right and it should have been easier. And I couldn't find where that information should come from.
Yes.
And it may have just been where I was at the time. It may have just been the way I was seeing it. Could have been my own mindset, but I knew there was better ways to do it. And certainly having insight into my father's skill set, which at the time he wasn't exceptional at re-delivering how to do what he was doing either. So there's been a real collaborative piece between the two of us of give me your skills and I'll give you the words.
Yeah.
And we've joined together to create a pretty holistic training platform where we deliver the why behind the what, so that those people who want the information can get it. It's applied animal science as well, so you're really skilled stockmen and stockwomen. We can give them that theoretical component, and what that gives them then is the capacity to put that to their actions and then go and retrain or to train people with a really good foundation, as opposed to the we do it this way, now we do it this way because, and it makes sense. And likewise with the green ants in the industry, you know, a younger generation we know likes information given to them differently, and they certainly want to know why it is that they have to do something that way, as opposed to just this is the way we do it around here, get it done, which is more traditional version. Which has its place as well.
I guess our industry is full, Lucy, of people probably not dissimilar to myself in terms of that we've been around cattle our whole lives, and we've learned from the people that have gone before us, but in no type of structured way. So perhaps there's a generation or more than a generation of people that haven't really thought about why they do.
Absolutely.
What they do.
Yeah.
I can see that there's a great need there.
Yeah. And there's people out there who are just incredible stockmen too.
Yes.
I just want to take them, put them in my pocket, you know, take them everywhere with me and be like, okay, go, show, demonstrate. And then we can talk about why it's working or why something doesn't or how we do it differently next time.
Yeah, excellent. This year, you've had a bit to do with Animals Australia. Lucy, we had the World Angus Forum, and as part of that, the World Angus Forum Youth Competition. And we pretty quickly identified it was good to get those young people involved with yourself and get learn some new skills, because they're from, you know, a range of different countries. How'd that experience go? They're mostly international, so you can be free to tell us.
Yeah. the most rewarding element of working with youth or young people for me is seeing their progress in a short period of time and how open-minded they are to learning. I really love working with internationals and different cultures. I find it really fun. I guess I'm learning just as much from them as hopefully they are from me in different elements. But that was a really fun competition. I was really proud to be part of introducing that stockmanship element into that youth competition, because I think I think we dismiss how important that is. So I was really proud to be part of it, and some of those young people were really fun to work with. And we can tweak it next time a little bit, I think. I kept asking, can I have some more time? Have it just a little bit more time for this. Unfortunately, there's bigger fish to fry in those sort of events, you know. Yeah. But it was a really great snapshot and introduction, and I was very thankful to be there, and it was a cracking event too, so I didn't mind hanging around enjoying it.
Oh, that's great. No, we had a lot of great feedback, which is great. Lucy, you hear the term low stress stock handling, and then I hear you describe your work as stockmanship. What's the difference? How would you separate the two, or is there a difference? There might be no difference.
Sure.
How do you go about explaining that?
Stockmanship's probably a more traditional word. I think low-stress stockmanship has been, or low-stress stock handling has been introduced more as a buzzword, something that's been introduced in the last 10 or 12 years or 15 years. Call it what you want, as long as you're doing some version of it. And it is at the core the same thing. It's about creating a respectful relationship between stock and man, and creating voluntary flow and improving animal welfare, performance, productivity, handler well-being. It's a big holistic picture, and to define the term stockmanship is something that we've been doing or trying to do for quite some time, and it's quite fluid and it changes. Low stress is a terminology that I use simply because I think it comes with some misconceptions,
yes.
That being that you've got to be gentle and slow and soft, and stock handling to me is getting a job done.
Yep.
I am boots on the ground girl, and we've got a job to do, and we need to find the best possible way to do it for those animals, for that business, for that handler, and for the performance we've got to achieve in that day. So stockmanship to me is founded on the traditionalism of a stockman, and that's being a hardworking person that's the caregiver to those animals, despite the weather or the job or the people or whatever else has to be done. We're the custodians, and we get it done out there, and that's stockmanship.
That's great. No, that's a good description. If we've got commercial Angus producers and seed stock both listening to this podcast, there can be a perception with seed stock producers that everybody's got quiet cattle in there because they're registered and they might fit into a different bracket. How do you think stockmanship or good stockmanship adds value to a business, but a cattle breeding business?
I think there's crossover. A cow is a cow is a cow. They've all got the same innate survival instincts and needs. It's just their exposure to humans, like you say. They're handled differently depending on the herd number and often the state or the region that they're in. But understanding good animal behavioural science and stockmanship skills for both sides of that spectrum is incredibly important, because, as I said, it's about creating a trusting, respectful relationship. And a day in the yards with cattle that don't have any respect for you because they're desensitized or overhandled or don't understand the herd mentality can be really challenging, frustrating, and often where we see more aversive handling, which can put people in a more dangerous situation as well, or jeopardize that animal welfare. So there's crossovers into both. It's really about understanding the application of that pressure and release, and knowing, being able to read that animal or understand that animal's behaviours before you go into work with it. so that you can work out what I need to do in order to create voluntary flow with that animal as opposed to force motion or fear motion.
Okay, yeah. No, that's good. How do we compare? You travel quite a bit and you've been to the States, you've learned from Dr. Tom, but you brought some of those lessons back. How do we compare, do you think, as Australian stockmen or cattle producers compared to what you're seeing in the States and other places? How do we fare generally?
Good. I think that the skills we have here in Australia are quite impressive, considering we are such a young country. The traditional cowboy or cattleman in America, that's been around for a really long time. We obviously don't rope and drag over here, which is fine. it's becoming more prominent in the States not to rope and drag either, but it is quite traditional. And to be honest with you, those community events of those ropings are just the most incredible experiences and the most beautiful. Community comes together and supports each other, and the gates are always open, and everybody always gets a chance, whether you're a hand or you're learning hand or your grandma, it doesn't matter. They're a really fabulous community event, and that's what I like about Middle America over there and that cowboy life, is that they're full of pride and every gate's open, and they all want to share stories, and they all want to talk about what they're doing right and wrong. They're super, super humble. And we got some of that in Australia as well. I think we might be losing some of our traditional values of the stockman over time, though.
Yeah, okay. I've certainly seen that when I've met with our American colleagues. There's a lot of beautiful people in the industry over there, and yeah, there's a real culture around it. I think you're quite correct. I hope we don't lose that in Australia, but certainly I've been impressed with some of their values that they hold dear over there. What would you, maybe it's a bit early in the podcast to ask you, Lucy, but if you had to, what would be a couple of take-home messages? You're running a cow calf operation commercially, one of our members, and you had to give them three quick wins that they could embrace from yourself that would improve their cattle handling. What would they be?
Only three? This is my favourite topic. This is my favourite topic.
You can give us 10
minutes. No, I'll keep it. I think fundamentally mindset, the mindset you walk into the yards with is the mindset that those cattle, that energy that those cattle receive, and that's the way your day will go. So from a people perspective, get your people right and you'll get your cattle right. That 5-minute toolbox talk, whatever silly name you want to put on it before you all walk out into the cattle yards that day, set the standard of behaviour, performance, what we're going to do and that we're going to have a good time doing it. So exceptionally important and so incredibly underrated, I think. The 5 minutes will give you back 50 at the end of the day if you set your people up right. Second to that is work off the globe of the eye. Don't worry about anything else on that animal, because if you can't see the eye, it can't see you. And you're not creating voluntary flow. So work off the globe of the eye, the front, the middle, and the back. And there's a bit to that in that science, but I won't take up all the time talking about it.
I remember you speaking with the World Angus Youth competitors, and I dropped into one of your sessions there. And that would be a take home for me. I think that was we might know it, but having someone explain it very clearly that should be our reference point was very helpful, actually.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of the journaling will say that the shoulder is the point of focus or point of balance, or again, whatever terminology you want to use. In reality, the shoulder is only sensory if you touch it. And touching an animal for me is one of the levels of pressure I get to following several others. The eye is what we've got to interact with, and our position on that eye will tell that animal whether we want it to come, maintain, or stop.
Interesting.
So lead it, maintain it, draw it, stop it, redirect it, the position on that eye. We have to work behind animals quite often, and that's fine. You can be there, but don't apply pressure in the blind spot. Always be on the side. And we can learn a lot from watching a good working dog. They don't sit behind that herd unless they're chewing on a leg. You know, they'll always come back out the side to that eye when they side to side back to that eye. So The globe of that eye is super important. Understanding their strengths and limitations in their vision, understanding the lateralization of those optic nerves and the differing functionality of the two hemispheres of the brain, and that they prefer us in that left eye, or novel experiences, they prefer to have in that left eye, and they'll respond to us better rather than react. You'll notice that a lot of our yards, regardless of how old they are, they're built so we're working on that left eye with the race and the crush. Lots of depth to that as well, but that eye is super important. And just remember, if it's really hard, you're probably doing something wrong.
Yes.
And if it looks bad, it probably is.
So good advice.
Find what good looks like and copy it. And save your legs, stand in the right position, look in the right direction, show that animal where to go. There's this really fabulous musing written by Bud Williams. You can find it on his stockmanship website. It's just called Proper Stockmanship. And he talks about how to change. It's a mindset shift, basically, and how you get that animal to go where it wants to go, instead of making it to go where you want to go. And ultimately, that's going to be the same thing. It's just a mindset shift. Let's show it where to go. Let's guide it there. Let's not force it from behind.
Excellent. There's some quick wins, Lucy. Mm. That's for sure.
Well, got it.
I guess in terms of, a bit reticent to ask, but what are some of the mistakes you see? Like, what's a common mistake in cattle yards from experienced people?
We underestimate the intelligence of them, but they're only as smart as we let them be. We've got to stop glamorising overworking. You know, when I was working on stations, which was limited, you could be running around in circles and that'd be okay, as long as you weren't standing still.
Yes, yes, yes.
And exhaustion is not a fun place to be. Fatigue and burnout is not a fun place to be. Working on properties, being a producer, being a ringer, a stockman, a cowboy, whatever it is you want to call it, you know, that's one of the luckiest places to be in the world. We don't need to make it any harder than it has to be. Yes, you've got to have grit and you've got to work hard and you've got to be there at all times to care for those animals in any weather, but you don't have to destroy yourself trying to do it. And I think this element, this concept, this methodology of stockmanship that we're trying to spread is about helping people do their job more easily, not tell them how to do it or what they're doing wrong or what they're doing right. Or we don't know enough about the neurophysiology of these animals to really understand what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're just learning as we go, but certainly we know how to make the job easier, and spreading that is what's a really great opportunity. So, it again, a bit of a mindset shift that you don't have to work physically super hard in order to get this job done. Because when we get fatigued, we know the repercussions of fatigue. We get to, at 17 hours of being awake, our body behaves in a manner as if we're over 0.05% alcohol in our blood volume.
Yes.
And what that comes with in terms of how our body behaves. So, and that compounds, you know, the more tired you get, the more fatigued you get. And we don't interact with humans properly when we're like that, let alone with cattle. So we put ourselves at higher risk. We start chewing people out for being in the wrong place or that the job's taking too long. And I think that's, you know, we do heaps of stupid stuff in the cattle yards. But the biggest one is letting ourselves get to a point where we're doing stupid stuff because we're not just taking a blow, having a 5-minute recap.
Yeah.
One of the most powerful things you can do when something is going wrong is have the confidence and the pride to just say, let's stop and go to plan B.
Yes.
Don't think this is working. Yeah. Let's have a plan B, a C, or D. That's one of the really great things that we can do in our workshops. You know, there's a big difference between those two-day workshops and the on-the-job training. Remember, on-the-job training, we can get a lot done in those 4 or 5 days, but we don't often have a lot of time outside of the actual pressures of the working environment to truly practice without thinking, oh, I've got to be here next or I've got to get that done.
Yes.
So those 1 and 2 day workshops, we've just got that as we could work in the dark if you want, but to practice and identify when something's going wrong and how we fix it. Because that resourcefulness and being given, you know, my father, Shane, would have made most of the mistakes, I think, and he knows then what the plan B is, or when plan B doesn't work, plan C is. So let's use those lived experiences and share them around and say, I see what's about to happen here. Let's stop, pivot, and do this instead. Yes. Let's open that gate over there rather than wasting 15 minutes trying to get that stinky old cow out this gate over here. Just have that capability to go, I've seen it, I'll do it, let's change.
Yeah. No, that's helpful. I've done a bit of training with Crusaders Rugby, and they've got a leadership program, and they talk a lot about going from the red zone to the blue zone.
Yes.
Just in them, when it's all going against you, just coming back to, what are we trying to do? Get the calmness of your mind, and then you'll get a far, far better result.
Absolutely. Yep. I've been, Alan Parker has been high on my reading and podcast list probably for a couple of years now. And he's a neuroscientist, a master negotiator, and a forensic linguist.
Yeah.
Just bonkers, you know. But the incredible thing about him, even with all that academia, is his capacity to facilitate information to your average person like me is quite profound. And he has taught me a lot through those methods of understanding human behaviour and what certain behaviours look like, so you can bounce off that and know what to do to change maybe that mindset, or to influence and motivate and negotiate for a shared common goal. Yeah. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good. Lucy, so you're a young person coming. We've got a lot of young people in the breed, which is great. Actually, beef has attracted a lot of young people in more recent times, which is great. What would you say to somebody that's quite young looking to implement some of this going forward? What should they do? They might be working on a property, they might be at university, but what's some good steps to learn some of these skills?
You've got to go find what good looks like. And you don't know any different if you've only seen one version. And the capacity to take little bits from everything and adapt it and put it together, I think, is the most important. Getting that exposure and be confident to go out and try it. You know, go from Victoria to New South Wales to Queensland to the Territory, wherever you can go to learn from people doing things differently. They're not going to come knocking on your door and say, I'd like to teach you how to do this. Certainly nobody's done that to me. I've had to work real dang hard to get the opportunities that I've got, which are opportunities because I've created them. So have the confidence to go next door, go ask for help, call Scott, you know.
Are you more hopeful there's a better change? Mm-hmm. And that's another question for you, and we might talk about that in a minute, but you see a lot of people in a year in this environment. Are you seeing positive change?
Yes. The roadblock probably is the long-term offering of progression because of how long it takes somebody to be really, truly skilled. Have we talked about the Dunning-Kruger curve?
No.
It's about, I haven't explained this for a while. It's basically about, it's the curve of learning. And it's about competence versus confidence, and over a period of time, how it gets harder and harder and harder, and we think we're never going to get it.
Oh, yeah.
Because to start with, we think it's pretty easy and we've got it all, and that's that mindset, right? Like, Look at me, yee-haw, I'm a cowgirl. But in fact, you got a real long way to go until you are, in fact, in that position where you've got enough skills to help the next person to solve the problem with the cattle, the horse, the machinery, all of that production it takes to be there. I think our biggest roadblock is keeping people entertained through that period of learning.
Yes.
And not just feel like they're slaves.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it can get a bit like that.
Yes, the longer you're in the learning, the more you realise you need to learn, don't you?
Absolutely. How little you know. Yeah. Yeah, when you finally get to a position where you've got to teach somebody something, you really know how little you know. You've got to put it into words.
That's right. Lucy, we probably should have covered this at the start, but you do a lot of kilometres in a year, don't you? I think you cover most states, don't you, with
yes, sir.
What you do. Yeah, give us a bit of a a quick overview of the types of organisations you work with and the mm-hmm. types of training that you're doing. Are you?
Mm-hmm. We're not going to the territory. Other than that, every other state and territory in the country, just not the Northern Territory.
Is that because of the TV series?
I don't know that I'm good enough. No, just simply haven't got that client base stretching through there. I'd love to spend some time there. In fact, somebody said to me recently about a potential job in the Territory. So, but we, the fundamental of our service was for training mm-hmm. in the workplace to offer people the opportunity, like we were just talking about, to get that more hands-on and practical training opportunity outside of just hit the ground, run, and yep. work it out as you go. So that was the foundation. We knew there was a niche there and we knew people really wanted a hand. So creating subscription programs where we can see the change develop over the time and have quarterly visits through to those properties
yep.
So we can continue to support those teams. We also added into that an element of a reporting framework which can support the due diligence requirements of that business and show the reasonable care through the training. We've also got that reporting framework. I've redeveloped it recently in that we can matrix those areas of training over a period of time and track progress. So we can use that information to then create a benchmark across all of our clients of who's high-performing in which areas and which areas right. is, generally speaking, a weaker section across the industry so that we know where to focus next time. And our managers and our leaders can say to us, right, we missed this section. We should have paid more attention here. Or this person was hiding for quite a bit of that. Let's put them in there and have a bit of focus on. Why haven't we done a theory section for 6 months? Well, we need to organise that. So that's the fundamental. And then off the side of that is the 1 and 2 day stopmanship clinics, which are super fun. Basically, that's when somebody calls up and says, I want to host a clinic. What do we do to get you there? Usually 10 to 12 people per clinic. And this can be all throughout the supply chain. Recent ones this year were with rangers, council rangers over at Byron Bay. That was really
fascinating.
Nice yep. location, yeah. I'm facilitating a youth stockmanship clinic or piloting a youth stockmanship clinic this weekend in Gundawindi. So there's heaps of variations. And then I guess the third arm is more of your consultancy space where we go in and can do facility reviews from handling, welfare, compliance, QA, safety, facility design, you name it, put together a snapshot picture of what's going on in this business, and then fun jobs like facilitating a producer days, talking to groups, association dinners, those sort of, fun ones.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds good. Sounds very good. You've got, from our chats, you've got a real interest in psychology too, don't you, in terms of how that impacts particularly work performance with people. What are you've talked a bit about mindset. What else do you see when you're working with stockmen, or you might be working with feedlot staff or people in sale yards, beef producers? What are some other take-homes, do you think, from that psychology point of view that you notice in the industry that people could take on?
I think from my perspective, coming in and trying to work with a team, I've got a very short opportunity to work with that team. I'm being invested in to get a job done to improve this working environment or support the team or educate or train, whatever the scope might be. I've got a very limited time frame in order to get my job done. So it's super important, and this, I guess, is where a lot of this human behaviour interest has come from for me, is that how do I facilitate information in a way that is most impactful for the client that's investing in me so that we can be impactful for the people on the ground and ultimately those cattle that are in our care. So breaking that down with a lot of different elements of human psychology and creating a vulnerable space where everybody becomes equal, and fast-tracking trust, essentially, so we can influence from the get-go. There's often, I guess getting to your question, is that it's really hard for me to do my job
when somebody's got a bee in their bonnet, let's say, about somebody coming in to do something that I do. It's important for me that people realise that I'm not there to tell anybody how to do their job, and my expectation is I learn just as much for the working environment that I'm in as what I can share. So if somebody doesn't want to ride with me, to use that analogy, I'm not going to make them. Yes. And I'm not going to argue with them. But what that does is actually waste the time of the other people in that group who do truly want to learn and get better. So if you don't want to partake, that's a conversation for you and your manager. Don't waste the time of the people that are there with me to get a job done.
Right.
Does that, I think it's your question.
Yeah, I think
tactfully,
so.
Doesn't it?
I think so. I think so. I think
get out of the way, basically.
I think you've got a good ability to speak some truth into people's space, and that's quite a gift to be able to do that without offending people, isn't it? Sometimes the challenge, their mindset. So
yeah,
I think you seem to do that well, Lucy. You mentioned Dr. Tom, who. In your development, in terms of mentors in your life, who are some of your great mentors and what have they done for you?
So Dr. Tom is just one of the most incredible humans I've ever had the pleasure of being around, and now I get to call him my friend as well. He really did change the trajectory of my life. He's the most humble person I've ever met, genuinely. Doesn't even realise it. And he's so caring and compassionate. If everybody in the world got to meet him, we'd be in a better place, cattle or no cattle. So very fortunate. He has a capacity to fill me with absolute pride and strength and purpose, which is why it's important that I go back every year so that I fill that cup up, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, people shoot holes in it every day.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you imagine?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So, and my father, of course. I'm incredibly privileged, Scott, to have such a strong relationship with my father. We're a good team. We collaborate well. We've created something pretty special together. We are the, you know, absolutely the biggest frustrations in each other's lives as well. So I don't think it's all Mickey Mouse. but that's, we've learned a lot through that as well.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, my mother as well is my biggest fan, obviously, and I get to spend a lot of time. She's one of the strongest women. I'd call it determined. My father would call it stubborn, but my mother and I have that whatever characteristic that is.
That strength of character.
Yes, absolutely, and a hell of a lot of grit too. So I'm very thankful for them. And I guess, like I spoke to earlier, I've had a really diverse life. I've got a lot of exposure, and I'm good at seeing. I've developed a skill in seeing something that looks good and seeing something that maybe could be better and working out what that problem is or opportunity is and creating a solution. And I think that skill has come from all those people in those diverse environments I've worked with, the good, bad and the ugly, and there's been some of both of them. So
yeah, okay.
I've learned a lot from tricky situations and challenges, some potentially that I've created myself. Believe it or not. But I think that's okay, because as long as we have the capacity to reflect and work out how not to let that happen again, then they're the greatest learnings. I don't want it to be because of my own failures all the time. That's unhealthy. And it's great to have the wins. But if everything's going right all the time, I don't reckon you're having a big enough crack.
That's great. That's good. If you look at that, that development, then what would be the biggest mistake, or let's call it learning, and then on the flip side, what are you most proud of over that period of time?
Oh dear, the list is long of the mistakes. Would you believe me if I said I've burnt a few bridges in my time?
Can't imagine, Lucy.
May have poured petrol on it. Yep. And then flicked the match. I think from all of my failures and all of the people I've upset and the things that I've done wrong, my biggest take home is just to get over it. You know, be kind and compassionate always, but don't suffer any BS either. Know your place, know where you go next and know there's always somewhere else to be. So I don't ever want to sacrifice myself again to try and make something work that was just never going to work. There's millions of people in this world and there's so many spaces that'll work right and there's some that just won't. And I wish I had have had the confidence to learn earlier that I don't have to be so determined, we'll use that.
That's great.
And just use it as another opportunity to have learned what not to do next time or what to try differently. So, no specific details there, but from a collection of mess-ups. Mm. And I think off the back of that, my greatest achievement is the amount of times that I have fallen over and got back up, pulled my socks up and given it to her again, you know. So
incredible. That's,
you just got to keep dusting yourself off.
That's good. That's a good message, actually. Are you a reader?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
It's the best book you've ever read, Lucy, and well, why?
You'd be disgusted. I must have 5 books on the go at the moment.
That's great.
And,
no, that's
but they last, it depends.
Where your headspace
depends who I am on the day when I'm reading. And I've got to have different versions of them. You know, one on my phone to read if I'm out for dinner or something, and then audio books, obviously, and then I love hard copies. I've got so many hard copy books that I've read 3/4 of.
Is there a standout where you go?
Legacy by James Kerr.
It's very good. It's very good. It'll be in my top few books. Yeah, it's excellent.
I'm just listening to it again for the umpteenth time, and the same messages come out because they resonate with me each time, but I find more within it as well.
That's great. It's a deep book, isn't it?
It's a cracker.
And it's an incredible look at why that team was so successful. So those of you who are listening to podcasts and haven't read the book, Legacy by James Kerr, is a story about a journalist who was embedded with the All Blacks that sought to understand why they'd won something like 86% of their international test matches over a period of like 100 years. So it's a deep dive. It's a good one. I imagine the chapter you like most is one called No Dickheads.
That's one of my keys, yeah, the No Dickhead Rule. And I think actually the Sydney Swans have that. Is it the Sydney Swans AFL team that has that same value within their...
Could do. I was born and raised in the north of Australia, so I'm not so familiar with the AFL teams.
I feel like I read that somewhere. And the other one is the sweep the sheds.
Yeah, it's very good.
Because why should anybody ever have to clean up after us? And that is
that's
important message.
Yeah, great messaging, that book. So it's that is a great one. That is a great one for listeners to read. You see our breed a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, the Angus breed, we've got a pretty good reach. What do you observe from the outside? So what would you say is something as an industry that we need to look at or think about or wrestle with going forward?
Look, I think Angus, the Angus breed and the Angus Australia Association is just doing an exceptional job. Because that's hard to argue, Scott, really. You've for many years now and have invested very well in marketing this breed and being progressive with your genetics and how to keep it on the table for a very, very long time, regardless of the state that I am in. It's such a dominant animal in the paddock. So I think if, like anything that is on the march and high trend and becoming heavily consumable from all reaches, being that the hobby farmer to the large producer, it's important that we maintain the integrity of those genetics. We know that the right heart failure is really becoming quite exposed in the States. We know that it'll be here. It's just about keeping an eye on those genetics that you're importing and making sure we're testing for the right traits. I've got friends in a place over there in Nebraska who really have trouble with that.
Wow, okay.
And it's spread through their cow herd. So they take the losses or they have to remove their whole herd.
Yeah, sure.
It really will be detrimental and I think we need to not avoid that.
Okay.
Yeah. And probably the other one similarly is
as much as the data and the information and the tech and the ABVs are super important, don't stop looking at your animal. And we need to see when those West cattle are knuckled in the hindquarters, because majority of these animals are being fed out for longer days. When we select for one trade, we got to know what we're jeopardising on the other end and maintain that balance, because at the end of the day, we're livestock people and those animals are our livelihood. So we want to keep them strong and happy, and then they'll perform for us holistically.
Yeah, that's great. I think that comment will resonate with a number of our breeders, actually. That's a that commentary comes up to us quite a lot. So that's right. No, that's great. That's good. I follow sometimes and listen to Bob Catter, and he asks these. I noticed he goes to the schools and he asks this question. He says, it comes up to some young students. He said, if you're Prime Minister for the day, what would you do? I guess, Lucy, if you're the Department of Ag, the Minister for Agriculture for a day, and you look down the 10 years in the industry, what would you like to see in the beef industry? What would be some key changes you'd like to see?
Maybe a little off track, but I would like to see our educational department introduce some form of agricultural studies to every school all the way through to graduation.
You think that's urban as well?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. All the way through the educational department, I think it needs to be a core subject. I would love it to be a core subject.
Then you've been involved, haven't you, with introducing agriculture to kids not on farm, is that right?
A little.
Yeah.
Yep, a little.
Yeah. It's very important, really. It's important from as much as anything, attracting people to agriculture, I think.
Absolutely.
Non-rural background.
We need to bridge the gap. We need to bridge the gap. We need to do it the right way. And I think we need more hands-on capacity to do that. I said this workshop I'm piloting next weekend's been a pretty tough slog to get exposure out there. I'm not partnering with anybody. I found a host and I've got some people who want to come. So I'm going to showcase it, and I'd really like schools around the region to have a look at it and go, what's a version of this that we could do? So we've got plenty of associations and plenty of councils that are offering exposure, but that true hands-on practical ability to work out, is this a future career for me, or can I upskill myself before I step into the industry, or is this going to give me a head start because I've got absolutely no idea where to start? There's just limited opportunity, and I think we need that, but we need to understand as well that it's not that easy to do.
Yes, yes. No, that's great. So you travel for days and weeks at a time, don't you, Lucy? I imagine they're pretty long days and pretty taxing, and you're trying to develop the business with yourself and Shane. Lots of moving parts, lots to think about. Probably try and do your best at times too when you get a little bit of a break. But what do you do? How do you keep yourself sharp mentally and I guess wrapped in with that? How do you switch off from work? Because if you're traveling, working, interacting with people every day, it could be difficult.
So switching off involves beer.
Right.
I travel with my dogs everywhere I go. And that's they slow me down. They really do. It makes the days harder. I've got to be up earlier. I've got to be walking them. I've got to find somewhere to stay and that isn't going to be upset with me for having them there. I've got to feed them. They slow me down, but it's probably a good thing too, because that is my little bit of peace.
Yeah, that's
whilst on the road, you know, and I get really tired. I try not to spend more than 2 months away at a time. 2 months that's a pretty
tough.
2 months,
yeah, it's a bit of time, Lucy.
It's a tough slog. So 4 weeks is ideal, but again, it's more about how I make that travel line up and make sure it's economical for clients as well in different states. So I try to find some middle ground where it works for them and it works for me, not being a lunatic as well. But, yeah, my dogs keep me sane. It's a bit weird, I know, but if I'm at home, if I get the chance to be at home, I really like starting colts. And if I don't have time to mess with a horse, I'll just go sit out in the paddock and watch the sunset and watch them.
Yeah.
Like Paddy Cornman as they are.
That's great.
So,
and you like to ride, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do like to ride, yeah. I'm not a competitive rider by any stretch. In fact, I'm pretty terrible at that, but I like starting colts and I just like riding into the hills, you know. I do like working cattle too, evidently.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and I guess I try to be reasonably healthy. You know, those first couple of years I thought I'd get away with eating dim sims, potato cakes and Coke. That didn't last very long. So I try to manage my nutrition quite well. And it's just a balance. It's just a balance. So
well done. That's great. So what's next for Morrissey Livestock Services? Are you any big projects on the horizon? Is there new areas of the services that you'd like to roll out? Yeah, what's your big next goal, Lucy?
Well, I've just accepted another professional development course, which is probably the biggest one to date. So that is going to absorb quite a bit of my time. But I was due for that as well. I think that the people we surround ourselves with are super important. I'm motivated by learning. So this course that I'm doing is through 44 Farms Beef Cattle Academy in the States, through Texas A&M University, and very tailored certificate in beef cattle production. Fortunate to have been offered a scholarship or part scholarship for that. So I'm really going to commit pretty hard to that. And it's the next step in the right direction to spreading a little more into that nutrition space, a little more into that genetic space, and a little more into that the science of it all as well. So that's going to absorb quite a bit of my time for the next 12 months. I'm excited about that. And then within that, I want to start looking at probably promoting a bit more widespread uptake of 1 and 2 day stop and ship clinics.
Okay.
So potentially, I get it. Everything we've done from conception has been quite organic, really. Promotion's not my strong suit, not Shane's, definitely. So I think we've got enough spread now, we've got enough reach, we've got enough great friends in the industry that we can ask a few people to, well, let's host something at your place and open it up to community to come. Certainly for the likes of these youth stockmanship clinics, I just want to work out how I get people into that opportunity. So I think a few more of them. I really love those clinics. So I'll work towards that in the next few months, maybe for the new year, and see what hosting a few looks like. Certainly around Texas at home, they've had some people. They'd be real happy to do that. So
excellent. Is that an opportunity for some of our members if they are interested in hosting something like that with their clients? Would that be something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to. Yeah, you just got to give me a call.
Excellent. That's great. Probably a funny question is, you just made some characters, really, Lucy, really. You must. Beef industry is blessed with characters and stories. What's the most interesting experience you've had, or most interesting person that you've come across in the beef industry?
Scott, you put me on the spot with that one. I just think we're so lucky that it's not a pretentious industry to get into, is it? You can be any dang person and come on in. I think sometimes it looks daunting from the outside, but anybody's welcome.
Yeah.
You know,
That's a great statement. Yeah, I think we do attract all comers during
the time. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a big industry.
Yeah.
I guess if I don't ask this question, I know the answer to this, but the listeners would want to know, are you a Morrissey from the Morrissey cattle handling with the calf cradles and things? Lucy, are you connected there?
No, we're not related to, is it Morrissey & Co? Yeah, they're Morrissey & Co.
I think so. I've got one. I'm not sure how it's branded.
They're fabulous cradles, and they've got a new crush out as well. Looks excellent. Morrissey & Co. Plug.
Yeah.
Great family.
But no kickbacks to losing. Yeah.
Right. No, not related.
I think we got a few questions around the World Forum when you were presenting for the World Youth Competition. A number of people asked me, they said, oh, is she one of the Morrisseys? And I said, well, she is, but I'm not sure that she's with the cattle handling.
Sorry to disappoint.
No, that's fine. Now, in terms of values, I always ask this with people, what would be in your business, professional, personal life, a value that means a lot to you? Maybe you might have 2, 3, 4 that, what is really important to Lucy Morrissey?
Professionally, Morrissey and Friends Livestock Services values are honesty, integrity and respect. And I think that's the foundation of the Australian stockman, traditionally. So
That means that the service we provide to our clients, we will be honest in telling them what will help them, where the problems are, what they're doing well. Integrity means that even if that means we might upset somebody or offend somebody, we're going to let them know what we think needs to happen with that business in order for them to progress and be better. And respect just is that we're going to do that the right way. And I think respect is the fundamental characteristic of the Australian stockman, is that we'll give you respect regardless, and but you can lose it too. You probably won't get it back.
Yeah, that's good.
And look, personally, I guess authenticity, super important, and kindness and grit.
Excellent. Good answer. I love it when people have thought about it deeply, and obviously you have, and so that's great.
It's hard to know who you're going to be sometimes, I think.
It takes people a while to work that out in their life, career as well. It takes some hard knocks at times to work it out, I think.
It means there's something to fall back on too. If you're questioning what you've done or questioning where you've been or questioning a situation, whether it was good or bad, being able to fall back onto a value set of who you are and who you know you are, even if that might change over time, it's grounding.
Yes, that's excellent. You've travelled a lot, Lucy. What's your best beef-eating experience that you've ever had?
Man, I have travelled a lot all over the world, and I have eaten a lot all over the world as well. I worked in hospitality for a long time, both fine dining. I've been to some of the best restaurants in the world, so of the worst too. Yep. But I've eaten chicken's feet and sashimi from the Japan fish markets, and I've eaten snails in France and traditional beef tartare, wagyu tongue, carpaccio. You know, I've eaten some. I had some really great opportunities. I love.
Is there one you'd go back to and say?
Oh, beef carpaccio is just fabulous. I reckon the first time I had that would have been at Movida in Melbourne, actually.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
You'd go back again.
Absolutely. Excellent. Yeah, I love raw. Like, I love raw, rare beef.
I do love fun. I love beef in all types of ways, but I was in Czech Republic and had steak tartare, and it was just an amazing experience. Just the flavours that are in the product is incredible. Yeah.
And really throw a spanner in the works. I don't know what you're going to think about this, but biltong jerky, that South African jerky, is probably going to be the best jerky in the world.
It's wonderful. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's really excellent. That's good. You're talking to our membership through a podcast. Without any formed question, what would you want to say to the 4,000-odd Angus producers that we have in our network?
I think there's such a diverse range of people out there doing the same thing and reaching for the same goals. Being really united as an industry, regardless of your breed, regardless of who your neighbour is. The future sustainability of this industry is going to really require us to link arms regardless of the demographic. And I mean that mostly in the sense of drawing people into this industry from outside of it, bridging that gap between the urban and rural divide. Open your gates up, provide opportunities, have an open mind. Being a stockman is founded on humility. And I think we can really spread that with the fundamental being through such an incredible platform like the Angus Australia Association and the open-mindedness of the people running that association and being responsible for it and creating podcasts and that sort of thing. So be kind, be humble, and let's work together.
I think be kind and be humble. I think that's you've mentioned that a number of times when we've had conversations. I think it's lost in society. But, no, it's been the absolute privilege to have a conversation on the podcast today. It's a wonderful opportunity. I always enjoy our conversations. There's no surprises there, which is wonderful. And for the listeners that are interested, Lucy did a tremendous job with the World Angus Youth Competition. I think those young people went away with some really good skills and knowledge and maybe a headspace change, which was really important. And We've had a great association, the Angus Society and Lucy this year. So I'd encourage our listeners, if they're interested, to search Lucy out, have a conversation, see what Shane or Lucy could do for your businesses. And you're both different skill sets there, but you've got a good website. You've got some great social media that goes on there. And yeah, search her out. And Lucy, thanks so much for your time on the Angus Table podcast.
Thank you for having me, Scott. We need to work some cattle together soon.
That's right. That's right. My poor cows, they might know which way to go.
But we can work that out, see. I'm good at that.
That's right.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure and a privilege. And I do always enjoy our conversations. Yeah.
Great to have you on, Lucy.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Angus Table. We look forward to bringing you more conversations that support your success in the Angus breed and your farming operation. I'm Scott Wright, CEO of Angus Australia, and today's Angus Table podcast is produced by Mel Strasberg. Until next time, all the best.